behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen.
Ben, we're back with our second part of our cliffhanger, maybe? I don't know. Would you call it a cliffhanger?
Well, you know what? We will call it, let's just call it part two.
Fair enough.
The Bayanine. You know, like how sequels always have name of the episode or name of the show and then like a colon and then the somethinging.
Sure.
So,
yeah, why not?
So let's jump right in. Let's get back to motorcycles, Scott. Let's get back specifically to motorcycle gear. I saw some advice that that really made me think, and I thought they made a great point. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful write-up that I found going through a couple of different threads where they spoke about what you need to look at when you're picking up a motorcycle. And I want to go over some of that stuff in a bit.
Very good.
But one of the things that got me is in the midst of this very thorough rundown of what to look at specifically, what to look for and what to avoid, there was a note about helmets that said, don't buy or use a used helmet. A used helmet is worthless.
And this is one of those areas where you get what you pay for and do whatever you have to protect your head. I can tell you that you don't want a cheap helmet.
No, you don't want a cheap helmet because you're putting one of your most important body parts in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You want to avoid any kind of trauma to that region of your body, I would say. That's probably the best way to put it. And we'll leave it at that because I know there are helmet laws and there's a great divide among motorcycle riders, you know, who likes helmets, who doesn't like helmets, and those that have to wear helmets versus those that choose to wear helmets.
Right.
And it's just there's a lot of gray area there, and people are very, very particular about the way they feel about that. Like if they learn to ride a bike without a helmet and now they're in a state where it's required, it's got to be very difficult to make that shift.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and I understand what you're saying there. If in the case of helmets, however, as you said, I love that you phrased it this way. You get what you pay for. You're looking for a helmet that has both safety certifications. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to get a new helmet because if the material within the helmet is impacted already, it's going to be less protective. People, we need to consider that we won't be able to know the history of this helmet.
True.
It may have internal damage, but it looks fine because the outer shell is okay.
True.
So
also,
just get a new helmet.
Used helmet, it's kind of like renting bowling shoes, you know? feels kind of the same to me, maybe even worse.
It's kind of gross.
You know?
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it gets kind of sweaty and hot out there, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, let's see what other protective gear isn't cheap, as one person said. But then again, you know what else isn't cheap? Medical bills.
True.
So this counts. What we would say is don't skimp on the gear. You will probably thank yourself especially if you're driving on for long periods of time and you run into inclement weather. You'll probably want something water resistant, waterproof. Just some recommendations. Here is, I'm going to read some highlights of some things that I saw that people were saying when you go to inspect the bike that may be your future used bike.
Okay.
Cool. You want to go along with me on this hypothetical bike buying journey?
I will, and I may add a few things here and there.
Okay, good, because I need your help on this one.
Yeah, we'll have to check them off so we don't double up.
Okay, so first thing that you need to do is resist the temptation to buy the very first bike you see.
Very good advice.
So look around, check out some different ones, bring a friend, a big believer in the buddy system, especially if you don't know too much about bicycles, bring a bike savvy buddy with you.
Yeah, because if you base this completely on an emotional decision, this is going to lead to trouble, I think, in the long run. So, emotional decisions as far as vehicles go, a lot of times there's some mistakes made there, impulse purchases, things like that. You know, as we've talked about through this whole podcast so far, there's a lot to consider when you're buying bikes. So a new bike or a used bike.
Right.
So really, really pay attention to some of these details we're telling you about.
Yeah, that's a great point. Helpful things to bring with you, aside from a bike savvy friend, a flashlight to aid inspection, because you are going to want to look as thoroughly over this used bike as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get a look at the bike when it's cold. don't have it warmed up.
Really? Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah, gotcha. don't have the person selling it having warmed it up already.
Ah, do you know why?
Well,
I can give you that answer.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because if you start it up, and if you start up, it will start up really easily if it's been warmed up. And you want to find out how this bike starts normally. Like if you were to head out to the garage in the morning and start the thing up, is it going to cough and sputter? Is it going to give you a lot of trouble? And is it going to burn a lot of oil initially?
Yeah.
You know, the blue smoke is something you need to watch for sure. I mean, for bad seals, things like that. So, yeah, that's very good advice, Ben. Make sure you check it out when it's cold.
Yeah, and so overall appearance, your first impressions, does it look roughed up? Does it look like this bike has a checkered past?
Yeah.
Maybe some scratches?
Wear and tear,
which I think is normal, but let's get a little bit closer with this. Does it look like there are asymmetrical problems with the wheels or the brakes? Does it look like the fasteners are stripped, you know?
Sure, look for signs that it's been dropped several times. I mean,
right, the handlebars maybe.
Yeah, or dropped or skidded, you know, in some way.
And that would be like deep scratches on the engine.
Also, like faded and oxidized paint, you know, and like make sure the seat's really cracked and chipped and everything. You know, if it's been parked outside in the sun for long periods of time or left out, you know, look for rust. Look for, just a lot of wear on the foot pegs, all kinds of stuff like that, you know, that you want to really pay attention to, just to kind of, again, give you a hint that it's past life.
Right. And, for instance, the front forks, it's cool to sit down on the bike, take a look at those forks, see if they're bent, because this kind of symmetry will work well for you. There are some, there's some parts of the bike that will be a clear indicator of a crash that you might not notice unless you're specifically looking for them.
Sure. Yep. And read up on that or talk to your bike savvy friend for that.
Okay. So we've talked about that, and I think those are some helpful hints, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you may also want, I've got a couple more to add here just quickly. You may want to look for new or aftermarket parts that have been replaced, you know, from some that have obviously been broken. So, you know, that may also be an indicator that something happened in this bike's past. May or may not. I mean, you can ask them about it and find out what happened. And, you
right.
know, again, it's kind of, do you trust the person you're buying from? You also want to make sure that the chain is nice and tight.
Yeah.
You know, there's proper slack in there. I think it's about an inch of slack halfway between the sprockets on the bottom run, and that's what you're looking for. But if it's all kind of, you know, caked and grime, you know, filled with grime and road dirt and stuff, that kind of shows you that, you know, it's maybe not being maintained all that well. There's a kind of a lack of maintenance there, so that's one thing to look out for. Also, you mentioned brakes. I think you can look at the rotors and find out if you know, there's some bluing there that may indicate that there's been a lot of heat buildup in that area. You know, so maybe signs of abuse in that way. You know, that the rider maybe didn't quite know exactly how to handle that. And you can check the tires at the same time for, you know, uneven wear and all that stuff.
Ah, good. I'm glad you said that.
Okay.
Want to add something to this? Every piece of a used bike kind of tells a story, you know? So when you're inspecting this, what you're looking for are, it's almost, you're on the spot forensic investigation.
Sure.
And the tires, at first might not seem that important because you say, well, tires are made to be consumed and replaced,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
But they're a good way to tell if this bike has been a racing bike. And if it's been a racing bike, you know, I'm not saying don't buy it, but if it's been a racing bike, it should be cheaper because racing is, as we know, a brutal thing to do to an engine.
Well, yeah, sure. For car or motorcycle, truck, whatever.
In general, because we're pushing a machine to its limits.
Sure.
So one helpful tip, look at the underside of the rear fender. And if you see a lot of like flung out rubber, it's balled out or anything, balled up rather, you know what that means? That means the owner's been doing burnouts.
Oh, good tip.
And if they're doing burnouts,
yeah, you can probably draw some conclusions about how that bike is being treated daily or at least weekly.
You know, I know I'm profiling here, and I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's all right. I mean, we're trying to help Andre out and, you know, others with maybe just kind of some things to look for. You know, it's the same type of thing. Like we talked about looking for flood damaged cars and things like that. And all these signs, they're indicators of how things have been treated or where they've been. And you can really do some good work if you do homework ahead of time. go to check out the vehicle, you know, whether it's a motorcycle, car, truck,
yeah,
you can pretty much get a good feel for maintenance and just how the owner treats that vehicle daily, weekly, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, Scott, before we go on.
What have you got?
I wanted to tell you about something that I watched that was completely different from what we're talking about. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Okay, so, you know, we've been watching Netflix Instant for a while now.
Correct.
Right, and it's I think it's the best deal in town that I have, at least at my house. I saw a new thing on there. It's a television show, not a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You like customized cars, right?
I certainly do, yeah.
You're what they would call a mod enthusiast, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Then maybe Street Customs will be for you. Have you seen this thing
before?
No,
I haven't, but sounds interesting. What is it?
It's just what it sounds like. It's a look at a customization shop run by a guy named Ryan Friedinghouse.
Friedinghouse? Okay. Close enough.
I'm probably messing up his name. But they excel and specialize in restorations of stuff like Shelby Mustangs, Dodge Chargers. They also build replicas, like a U.S. Army Stormer armored military vehicle, mm-hmm. For the Dubai royal family.
Oh, very cool. Okay, so they do a little bit of everything, I guess, right?
Yeah, and they're some of the best in the business, and you can check out multiple seasons of this right now on Netflix Instant.
Oh, very cool. And you know what? The good thing about this is that you can get a free 30-day trial membership. If you just go to netflix.com/carstuff and sign up, you can download that is your choice if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Again, free 30-day membership, so you know you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, you don't have to watch Street Customs.
But why not? I mean, we're telling you that it's good, right? You've seen it, so
yes.
So it's something worthwhile. We've talked about custom cars so many times on this mm-hmm. program. We've talked about, you know, George Barris as a famous customizer. We talked about
sure.
just some kind of these one-off type things that people do.
Ed Roth.
Ed Roth, that's right. I love that one. but I mean, as far as somebody who's just making a living doing this, so I guess that ties right in perfectly. Now, let's get back to our motorcycle topic because I'm pretty excited about this. The last thing that I wanted to mention on my list here is just make sure you inspect, and this is very obvious, you inspect the engine and transmission cases mm-hmm. for any kind of like seepage or you know, any kind of weeping at the seals, and make sure mm-hmm. that everything is tight there. And that kind of goes along also with, you know, starting it up and making sure that under pressure it doesn't leak. And, you know, check the area that it was stored in the garage, you know, and see, you know, if there's a puddle of oil below where it was parked. That's another indicator. You know, they may roll it to a different part of the garage for the showing, so be wary of that as well. Man, there's so much here.
I've got some other stuff.
Sure.
Ask the person selling the bike when the clutch was changed.
Good one.
Because they'll know if they're keeping tabs on their maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't know, then you need to really check out the clutch, right? Like, mm-hmm. Wet clutch, dry clutch, figure it out, try it out. What the point is that when you are here in this instance where you're inspecting this vehicle, you need to check everything, flip every dial, make sure the lights work in high and low, you know what I mean?
Sure.
The horn, even the small stuff like that.
Yeah, make yourself your own personal checklist if you want and bring it along with you and check it off as you go. You know,
that's
or
a great idea.
Study it ahead of time or just have your friend hold on to it and make sure that you're asking all the questions or, you know, talk about it with your friend ahead of time. And if you forget to ask something, you know, your friend will be able to, you know, maybe say, hey, wait, you know, we didn't do this. Let's make sure we get that before we leave.
And you already pointed out the, you made that great point about the chain already.
Yeah, you know, and before, okay, I think we're getting a lot, you know, kind of
we're getting into the weeds
on this. So let's kind of back it down just a bit here.
Okay.
I think, you know, we've probably given a lot of decent advice for buying a used bike for sure.
Oh, yes, you're right.
I do want to get to this, the simulator site that I mentioned, but, first I think we need to talk about just some key pieces of advice that I've received from other riders through email. And also, you know, just reading online, you know, some of the comment, you know, areas in these forums that I go to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good advice out there, and I think a new rider should pay attention to you know, somebody, again, who's had, you know, 20 years experience on the road, even 10 years experience on the road.
Yes.
There's a lot to be learned from somebody who has a lot of experience like this. So,
mm-hmm.
Of course, number one is make sure, and they all say this, make sure you take that motorcycle safety course. That's an absolute must. It's very, very important. It helps you with, on the road activities as well as low speed maneuvers, which you'll find low speed stuff is really critical. More so than you think. You'll find out that really quickly, at the first parking lot that you try to, try to negotiate. The next thing is, this goes back to engine size. Get something, some people are going to like this, with less than 70 horsepower. It means that you're, and this is the way they say it, that you're less likely to get into trouble or kill yourself immediately when you buy that bike.
Ooh, now, people don't like to hear less than 70 horsepower.
I know, but you know what? That's probably, again, sage advice from somebody who knows. They say, take it easy, learn the ropes, and then step up from there. And that's really, really important. And, if you want to do it in a year, step up again.
Sure.
Go right ahead and do that. But chances are, you'll have this bike for a few years, and this is a good learning tool. Also, first bike. A lot of people say it should be relatively cheap because they say you will drop it at least once in the first year of ownership.
Yep.
And I think I'm going to go skip to another thing real quick here that goes along with that. This is a service that I didn't know really was offered. When you buy a new motorcycle, and don't be afraid to ask for this because this is not something to be ashamed of. If you go to a dealership and you buy even a used bike or a new bike, it's very common for them to deliver that bike to your house. Don't pass that opportunity up if you're a brand new rider, because a lot of bikes, there's a lot of trouble leaving the dealership. And I know it's kind of almost, tongue in cheek that, someone says as soon as they left the dealership, they smashed the car or whatever.
But that happens.
It happens because these motorcycle dealerships chances are they're on a busy road. The first time you're trying to negotiate, slow speed turns on your brand new bike that you're unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
Because it's got different weight characteristics or whatever from the bike that you learned on. Through the safety course, rather. Don't be afraid or ashamed to ask for them to deliver the bike to you. It's a very common request, and at the very least, have a friend maybe come along with you that can drive it home that has some experience on motorcycles.
Oh, man, you know what? Now we're talking about this. I just realized that I got that safety statistic wrong.
Really?
Completely wrong. The majority of motorcycle accidents, Scott, happen not within the first 5 years of ownership, but within the first 5 months.
Ah, okay.
When I was saying that, I was thinking it was weird, but in the first 5 months makes more sense and hopefully kind of underlines why we're hitting safety so hard.
Yeah, safety is so, so important. I mean, and again, chances are you're going to make a lot of these mistakes early on. So 5 months does make sense there. This is another one that goes with safety, I guess. Learn how to properly brake, and properly is underlined here on my notes because there's this front and rear brake fade that you need to learn and execute that properly in different situations. Calls for different braking characteristics, I guess.
Sure, different braking strategies.
Exactly, and you really need to know quickly which strategy to use and to brake appropriately for that situation, whether it's loose material on the road, you're coming into a tight turn, there's something unexpected happening in front of you, that type of thing. So you got to really learn that, you just almost unconsciously be able to do it.
And the easiest way to learn that is to take the MSF safety course.
We keep going back to that MSF course.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, really critical. The last little bit of advice here that, from other riders that I've got, this is the one that's maybe something a lot of people wouldn't think about.
What's that?
Ride solo first. Don't automatically get in with a group of your friends and ride in a pack of motorcycles on the road, because if you make a mistake within that group, if you veer out of your lane, whatever happens, that's just going to be amplified and it's going to cause a lot of trouble within that group.
Well, like a domino effect.
It could quickly cause a chain reaction within that group. However, if you're out riding solo, you got a little more room for error.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll put it that way. Error on the, if you're talking about kind of drifting in your lane.
A little more latitude.
Exactly. Just a little bit more. But before you ever think about entering a group of riders, make sure that you at least several times get the feel of your bike on your own. Ride solo first. It comes down to the safety of others. So, you and others, really. But, that was the last bit of advice. And that was another strong one that a lot of people felt, they felt very strong about that piece of advice and that, make sure that you do that first. Ride solo first.
Yeah, I want to read some of these other comments that were pieces of sage advice to newer motorcycle riders.
Sure.
Because there is a group of people looking out for you. Bikers do look out for each other. And one thing that kept coming up that I heard was, ride as if everyone else on the road is trying to kill you.
Yeah, I've heard that many times.
I heard that too. And I think some people would say, ah, Scott, Ben, that's way too paranoid. But considering the consequences, I think it's just a very brief way to underline the safety concerns. Mm-hmm. Another piece of advice I heard, which I love, I wish I had made this up. Remember, shiny side up, rubber side down.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense, right?
So a lot of this is just emphasizing that point. Now, Scott, I think we've gotten to the point where hopefully we've given some good pointers about how to find the right bike for you. Remember what your body frame is. Get a bike that you fit comfortably on. Try it on. A lot of sellers are not going to be cool with somebody taking a test drive because of liability. Mm-hmm. What they can do, what they may get around is they may say, okay, we'll buy the bike. You have to buy it first, and then you can take it for a drive, and then if you don't like it, I'll give you your money back.
Wow.
So that's something that people do as a courtesy just because it is a little too risky.
Sure.
For the test drive.
Yeah, I've always kind of wondered how motorcycle test drives go because, it seems like you're putting that in the hands of somebody that you just don't know how they ride. It's not like a car where, you know, you obviously drove your car in here.
Yeah.
And you know how to drive. I can see your car is not all banged up. I mean, there's always a chance something will go wrong, but you can't really take the dealership personnel with you on the back seat, really.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of throws things off as well. So, I don't know. It's an interesting question, how motorcycle test drives go, really. Test rides.
Well, that was the info I could find, but I just wanted to throw that in and, then toss the ball to you because I'm quite excited to hear about this.
Well, you know, you just mentioned, how the bike fits you, right?
Yes.
And this is the simulator that I was talking about. There's something that this is a really cool tool that you can use online that will kind of give you an early start on maybe the appropriate type of bike for you to buy. And you can find this thing. It's at cycleergo.com. That's cycleergo, E-R-G-O.com. And it's a motorcycle ergonomic simulator. You can find it by searching those keywords. And what it does is it gives you this great big list of bikes, all types of bikes. And you select the type of bike, the model, the make, the year, all that stuff. It shows you an outline of the bike, and, you know, very almost like a photo of the bike in profile. And then you input your information in just a drop-down box with your height information. Let's say you're 5'10", 5'11", whatever.
Sure.
Your inseam height. So it shows you, like, you know, where, if you're measuring for pants almost.
Yeah.
But that helps you with, how high up you stand, I guess. So, you know, seat height plays into this part of the whole thing. It'll give you the calculated seat height of the vehicle, the forward lean of the vehicle in degrees, of the motorcycle in degrees, and the knee angle, whether you've got your feet, whether you got your feet up on the pegs, or when you had your feet up on the pegs in degrees again. And I guess the number indicates more or less bent, you know, if your knees are really bent up or if they're straight out.
Yeah.
You can go down so far as to like a Vespa, Ben, where your knees are at, you know, 97 degree angle, you know, because they're out, your feet are out in front of you, actually. So more greater than 90 degrees. It's just a really cool thing to do. And maybe one of the neatest features of this, you can select several bikes. And, you know, I have a little toggle wheel on my mouse, like everybody
probably has, right?
You can select maybe four or five bikes, put in all of your information. You can even add a rider to the back of the thing if you wanted to. And it shows in profile the rider and, you know, the passenger. And then you can use the wheel to toggle between the bikes, and it fades in and out between from one to the next. So if you're looking at maybe four different bikes that are in the same class, like sport bikes,
sure,
and you want to see how different the seating position is between them, or how tall the seat is on these things, and how you're going to have to stretch or lean, you can kind of go back and forth between these things quickly, like within just seconds. You can go between four or five bikes, and it'll fade. Again, it's like four clicks between each one. So you see these overlays of the rider and the bike, and it's really, really a neat tool to use. And you could play around on this thing for an hour, even if you're not a bike rider.
And if you're a person who's interested in buying their first bike, this might be a really handy way to get started from the comfort of your own home, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's, again, just search motorcycle ergonomics simulator and it'll come up.
And thank you guys so much for listening. We hope that we provided some useful tips. We would also like to hear from the bikers in the audience. Could you guys write in to us with any tips that we missed that new bikers need to know when they're buying their first motorcycle?
Yeah, just take your time, make a smart decision. And, you know, we've given you a list of a starting point.
Sure.
Go out there and find your own information about what, you know, maybe some more specific information, what you're looking for. But, you know, like I said in the last crusade, you must choose, but choose wisely.
There's not a better way to end this podcast. That was excellent, Scott. We are going to head out now. You can drop us a line on Facebook where we are Car Stuff. You can leave us a note at CarStuffHSW on Twitter, or you can send us an email directly. Please do. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.